Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Today on the podcast, I'm joined by former Syracuse basketball player James Sutherland. I talked with James about his coach at Cardoza High School, a New York City legend, Ron Naclerio. His Syracuse career, and a lengthy pro career that has stretched from the NBA to Europe and back this season in the NBA G League.
Well, welcome back to another edition of the Inside Syracuse Basketball Podcast, brought to you by Crouse Health. Today's guest is a guy who Syracuse fans, I'm sure, remember, if not for his leaping ability, then for his three-point shooting ability, and also some of the incredible teams he played on. Former Syracuse star, James Sutherland. James, how are you?
I'm good. Thanks for having me.
I'm really looking forward to this conversation. It took us both a while to get our schedules to mesh and work this out, but it's been a while since I've talked with you, so I am looking forward to this. Why don't we start off with, you know, letting folks know where you are now, because it was really only recently that you signed with a team here in the United States. You're with the G League Ignite in the NBA's G League.
Definitely. I'm over here with G League Ignite, one of the vets. We have a lot of young guys, great guys. And one of the best parts is we have Coach Jason Hart, who played for Syracuse, and assistant coach Hakeem Warwick. So it's definitely nice to be with some familiar faces and great guys who played for the Orange.
Now, the past several years, you've been playing pro ball overseas in a variety of countries. How did the G League Ignite opportunity come about?
Coach Hart reached out to me, and he told me he really wanted me to help, you know, help develop guys, and you know, just get better as myself. So I'm going over here, doing our thing, and it's looking good.
What's Jason Hart like as a coach? I remember what he was like as a player.
Yeah, definitely outgoing. Really, you know, having a guy like Jason Hart who's been through it all, who played with his experiences, and also having guys like Hakeem Warwick who've been in the NBA, it's and also feel like your peers. You know, they're great. It's the great leadership over there, and they're relatable.
You know, I think a lot of people, when they hear G League Ignite, they know that it's a team that will take on younger guys who aren't going to college at a high school, you have a few younger guys, and they do this year. They have one kid whose name is fairly well known, Scoot Henderson. He's going to be a very high draft pick next June. But so while a lot of people are going to think, oh, this is a developmental younger G League team, it's not. There's a lot of guys like you who are experienced professional players, right?
Definitely. We have guys like John Jenkins, Poo Jeter, Aubrey Dawkins, these guys who played on NBA level overseas. So we all have experiences on basically basketball around the world. And I feel like it's a nice combination with these young guys. You just mentioned Scoot Henderson, who's physically ready for the NBA, and not only physically, but he's mentally ready as well. So like being in this situation, playing against pros every day, he's going to hit the ground running when he gets there. So it's a real amazing combination of guys. And also there's other guys who are in the same boat. So It's really fascinating.
I'm wondering what this season's going to be like when you have a team of kids like, you know, Scoot Henderson, a teenager, a couple other guys just like right around 20 in their early 20s, and then older guys like yourself and Aubrey, you mentioned Aubrey Dawkins, and you mentioned John Jenkins, who played at Vanderbilt. Right. You know, how do these different age groups mesh into a cohesive unit?
Oh, well, it's basketball. You know, we play to win no matter how young these guys are. We are definitely and everything like that. But I feel like them just seeing pros work out, matching their energy, their discipline, all discipline. It just translates over. So, and I feel like being a younger guy, playing with older people only make you better. That's just how it goes. And not only are you getting better physically, but you're learning. The game is slowing down for you because the game's a lot faster coming out of high school. So I feel like it's nothing but preparation. And you learn pretty quickly, especially because you're basically thrown into a fire as a kid. So you learn quickly. They're getting roughed up. They're getting a little bullied, but it's, you know, it works out. It works out because eventually they can stand their own.
What's it been like for you to spend, I don't know how long it's been now, like the last 6 or 7 years playing ball in a whole bunch of different countries overseas? What's that been like?
Oh, it's been amazing. You know, being able to play in the NBA for a little bit, mm-hmm. Going overseas and playing in EuroLeague. Going over, like, also all the places in Europe, Asia as well. I've been literally everywhere, Puerto Rico. So it's a lot of different experiences. I experienced a lot of different cultures and a lot of different teammates who are, you know, I keep in touch with today. So I enjoyed all of it. I mean, all the ups and downs as well. It's all good experiences, and it's nice to meet people and make connections with them as well.
I mean, you really have. You played in like the top league in France. Right. I know you played with Cremona in Italy, top. Yeah. You played in the Bundesliga in Germany.
Yeah.
Which league was the toughest?
I feel as if for France, it was EuroLeague, so that was definitely tough. You know, we weren't one of the top EuroLeague teams. We're playing tough competition every day, so it was tough. But I would say, of course, EuroLeague's the toughest. But as far as regular European leagues, I would say they were all different. I feel like at the time when I was playing in France, it was a lot slower at the time. Germany was a little faster. Italy was faster as well. I feel like it was all different experiences, all different types of ball. I mean, but it also depends on your team. But I feel as if, yeah, in France, was more we more ran sets more than usual. And Italy... and Italy and Germany were just going. It was fast-paced basketball. I had a Croatian coach in Germany, so that makes sense. We just run. You just run your legs off. So two practices a day, just running your legs off. So we were really running up and down. It worked. So it was good. But I feel like everything was different. I mean, also, with all the countries I played in, everything is also different. I mean, I played in Japan. I played the 2 and the 3. So, and usually in Europe is a more small – it's a bigger game, but – I played like mostly like the 4 or the 5 over there. So it's great. It's been crazy. Like I've been playing my first pro from like 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5. I've been playing from point guard to small to center. You never know, but it works out. Whatever the team needs, you know, I just give it to them. So
mixing basketball and culture together, which places were your favorite and which place was your least favorite?
Well, by far, Japan was the favorite. Japan is amazing. I feel like the accommodations you get with the team I was on was basically as close as to the NBA. Like it's like first class.
Really?
Yeah. And the least had to be France. I wasn't really too fond of France. Our owner was he was different. He was there's one game he sat down all the Americans and like for no reason whatsoever. Like, what's going on? Like, why would you set us all out? They lose the game, and it's like it was kind of different. It was different. It really depends on your owner, to be honest. If your owner is the owners do what they want, but other than that, I didn't really have any bad experiences. Everything else is pretty much cool. Everything overseas in Europe is done together. Everything's like family wise. We eat as a team. We go there, and we do everything as a team. We're always with each other all the time. And that's how you create good bonds with people.
Was it hard for you? Because I know when you came out of college, you know, you had a couple small opportunities there. You know, I know there was the Charlotte Bobcats at the end of one season had you, The New Orleans Pelicans.
Yeah.
Had you briefly at the end of the 2014 season. So you had, you got to play. I mean, how hard was it to realize, you know, well, the NBA is not going to be where I'm going to end up playing the bulk of my career? And that decision that you probably had to sit down and make to take that European offer the very first time.
Yeah. I mean, I feel as if, I mean, it's definitely hard when you go undrafted. You just know if you make a team, you're going to be 15th man. You're basically injured reserve. And it's difficult. But at the same time, I'm the type of guy to take it day by day. I just do what I can, control what you can control. And I guess to the point where, all right, so EuroLeague is kind of, especially when you're offered EuroLeague, it's kind of hard to not take, and, you know, because it's the best of the best. If you're not, if it's not NBA, it's going to be EuroLeague, you know. So, I feel like it's definitely a difficult thing because it's hard because it's going to be your first time away out of the country and all that. At the same time, I think I was basically looking forward to just experiencing different cultures, you know. And, I mean, it's just a blessing to be playing basketball, especially at my age, you know, because a lot of people after college, it might be it. So, I mean, I just feel like I take it day by day and see what happens.
Did it help that you were a little older and more mature, that you were a four-year college guy, that you had 2 years with here in the States with either NBA or G League before you did go to Europe? Did that help you when you did go overseas?
I feel like not really because NBA basketball and overseas basketball is completely different. It's a completely different style.
Did it help you make that adjustment, though, that knowing that, you know, listen, I'm going to have to go and there's a new culture here and I'm going to have to learn it, to do that at the age of 25 or 26 versus 19?
Yeah. Oh, definitely. Most definitely. Because at 19, I can't really – that's tough. As a teenager, just go out there and be in a whole different – basically a whole different world. Just, you don't know anything was going on and all that. But especially as an American, because you have – a lot of responsibilities, American, on these European teams. But I would say it definitely helped. It definitely helped having an understanding of being a professional. I feel as if when you go overseas, it's a completely different culture. It's no matter what country, and it's going to be completely different. And it definitely counts in the organization as well. But I feel like There's really no comparison because you're basically on your own unless you have a family. And if you bring a family, especially in Europe, like the time difference is, it doesn't match up because you're 6 hours ahead. People are calling you at midnight. It's kind of hard to get adjusted with that. But you mature faster, I feel, because you're on your own a lot of the time. So it's kind of difficult. I don't think when it comes to basketball stuff, you adjust easily, but when it comes to like off the court stuff, it's kind of difficult for some guys.
I did want to talk to you about your Syracuse days, but I think we have to talk about coming out of New York City, playing at Cardoza High School for a legendary high school coach down there by the name of Ron Naclerio. And you know, I'm assuming that a lot of the people that listen to this podcast are pretty knowledgeable basketball fans, and about half of them are going to know the name Ron Naclerio. Now, some aren't. So for those who aren't, who don't know that name, James, what can you tell us about your high school coach?
My high school coach, oh, man. He's a character. He's different. He's very outgoing. He's an extrovert. He tells you how he feels. And I feel like a lot of people seen him without even knowing it because he's one of the street ball legend guys. You see him out there, call him the doc out there doing his thing. He's in Point Guards document. Was it the documentary on HBO or is it he's on.
I did see that. Yeah. Point Guards.
Yeah, Point Guards. He's on. There was another one, N1 mixtape was the 30 for 30. You'll catch him on there as well. He had great NBA, good NBA players like Dwayne Carswell, Royal Ivy, and Skip to My Lou, Ray for Austin. He has the he's one of the men, he's one of the big guys in New York City. He's been great for not only his players but also other players in New York City that look to go school, D1 school, D2 school, whatever school for free. And he runs a good program over there, Cardozo, which is a public school, which is definitely hard, especially with Catholic schools like Christ the King and these big time guys. So he's always a genuine person. He tells you how he feels, and he always looks out for anyone really.
Seemed like any basketball event I ever covered in New York City, no matter what it was, I'd see Ron Nicolario.
You'll see him there. He's there. I guarantee you, he's there. You would think after practice he's going home. He's going to he'll call you. He'll say he's in Jersey. He's in New Jersey. He's in Manhattan. He's watching basketball. He eats, sleeps, and breathes basketball, and that's how he's been.
But didn't he play baseball at St. John's University?
He did play baseball. It's crazy, right? He was a baseball player, and no, he's pretty solid. So like, and one thing that people don't know about him is his father actually operated on Martin Luther King when he got stabbed, or was it stabbed? Or, yeah, I think stabbed. So, yeah, he's got a lot of history over there. And he used to have the room, the office. You go out, walk into his office, there's nothing but newspaper clips covering from the floor to the ceiling of all his players and everybody who's done well over there at Cardozo.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Yeah, I've never visited that office. I never had a chance to or a reason to go to Cardozo High and see it. But I've heard about it.
Definitely.
And it's Ron Nicolario's famous office, which just is plastered with pictures and newspaper clippings and unbelievable stuff.
He ran out of room. I don't know where he did all this other stuff, but yeah, it was a lot of room.
Well, you didn't know it during your days at Syracuse, but because one of his former players was playing here, I communicated with Ron often.
Yeah.
If I didn't call him at some point to ask him a question about you for a story, he was calling me wanting to know how you were doing. Did you know that?
Oh yeah. He definitely told me he's not shy. He's going to use your number as well, but no, he's always great. He's always great. It shows you how much he cares about his players. He was not only just doing that for me, but other people as well. So he was always on it.
Why did you go to Syracuse? Where and what other schools did you consider?
One of the reasons I can't forget one of the seeing Carmelo Anthony and those guys play over there. And what grade was I in? I think I was 13 years old for sure, or turning 13 years old. That was like seventh grade maybe. But it was amazing to watch. It was this amazing amazing run watching Carmelo, watching G Mac, Hakeem getting the block, of course. But I was like, oh, this is one of the schools that I want to go to. But funny thing is, I didn't even know where Syracuse was in seventh grade. Where's Syracuse? Because, you know, it's in New York? Oh, it's right here? It's upstate New York. So, but no, it was amazing. It was amazing to have them on the list. The orange always stood out to me. I went to high school with blue and orange as well. So going to Cuse with orange and blue as well. That was great. The Big East, it had, of course, the UConn, Georgetown, all the Big East schools, all the big schools, also Hofstra as well. But I feel like just something about Syracuse, I feel like I fit the prototype of a Syracuse athlete. Long arms, and it can move, athletic and all that stuff. And then it felt like it was a perfect fit. And also having Coach Hop at the time, Coach Hop was always coming down watching us. So that definitely, Coach Hop is a great guy in general. Also a great coach, and he was always coming down. He came down to one of our practices. I think he saw me from baseline to baseline in like three dribbles, dunk it, and he's like, "Oh my God, I had to go get this guy." So that was that help. And no, it's been great. It's been great. But there was other schools as well. All the Big East schools. I always wanted to play in the Big East, so I felt like Syracuse was the perfect place I wanted to be.
You know, you played at Syracuse. Your four seasons from 2010 to 2013 were basically a golden era Yeah. Basketball. I mean, the 2010 team at one point is number one in the country and had a number one seed in the tournament.
Yeah.
We'll skip 2011, even though it was a good team, went to the tournament. I think won a game in the tournament, maybe. I don't know. Yeah. 2012, you're number one in the country in the middle of the season, and you were number one seed in the tournament.
Yeah.
And then 2013, well, you go to the Final Four that year.
Yeah.
All right. So here's my question for you.
Yeah.
Which team was the best one you played on?
Best team I've played. Listen, I'm going to go, oh my gosh, I don't even know. Think about it. I'm going to be biased and say my 2013 team, but let me tell you something. As a freshman and just watching Wes Johnson, Chris Joseph, Scoop, Andy Routins, Orenze Anunoby, like, dude, those guys literally couldn't be stopped. It was crazy. And then we had rest in peace Fab Mello, Dion Waiters. Was this 2012? Yeah, 2012. Mm-hmm. CJ Fair. We were completely loaded. It didn't matter what teams threw at us. We were just it was another wave of guys. No, I think matter of fact that year our bench was competing with our starters for trying to get the most do the most damage in the game. Our practices were intense. Our practices, I think 2012, our practices were insane.
Your second string backcourt was Michael Carter Williams and Dion Waiters.
Basically. So I would say that was the best team, because I think back then they were saying our second string was a top 25 team. So I said I'm advised to say 2013, but 2012 was really crazy, because they were saying our second unit was a top 25 team. So it was pretty good.
I mean, Michael Carter Williams, first round pick, lottery pick. Dion Waiters, lottery pick.
Yeah.
You played in the NBA because you were coming off the bench that year. Yeah. Who was your backup? Was your backup center Rakeem?
No.
Well, he started.
He started
forward.
We had Bai, was a defensive just machine. Yeah. We wasn't getting anything passed by Musakata.
Not bad. And
yeah, so we were it was nice.
It was nice.
It was really nice.
All right.
It was like,
what was it like, or how did it feel to, after the disappointment of 2010 and the disappointment in 2012, to actually go to the Final Four in 2013?
I feel like it was great. I feel like from our time from 2010 to 2012, it was just a culture. Like, we don't know nothing, but I feel like we didn't know anything but to win. So I know a lot of people were saying our 2013 team, we lost a lot of talent, but we felt like, whatever. Like, we were still number one in January. And that was the time I was suspended for the year, for a little bit of the month. Then it was a little hiccup, but we picked it up in a Big East tournament. And honestly, it was amazing going to the Final Four, but being from New York, Big East tournament, that really hurt me. I really wanted to win my Big East championship, because it's at home at Madison Square Garden. Now I really wanted to win that as well. And Final Four, I just feel like because of the Big East tournament, everybody was back on the same page, and I didn't feel like nobody was going to really stop us. I know Michigan did a good job, and I wish we would have won that game as well. But it would have been nice to see Louisville back in the championship. For the Final Four.
After losing two of them in the Big East at the Garden.
Exactly.
2010, your number one seed, your number one in the country at the end of the season, and Orenze goes down with that injury in the Big East tournament and is not going to play in the NCAAs. And in 2012, Fab Mello is the defensive player of the year in the league. You guys have only lost two regular season games. Not even regular. One was in the tournament. Your number one seed, and then you find out like a day before or 2 days before the NCAA that Fab's suspended.
Yeah.
Which one of those hurts you the most, that you weren't able to go into the tournament fully loaded?
Oh, I mean, they both feel the same exact way. I feel like I would say Fab, not because of what happened with him, just the fact that we've been through this before last year or the 2 years, like, oh, here we go again type. But really, there's really nothing you can control. I feel like, I personally felt like, even with him out, I felt like we still could have got it done. That's how good I felt like we were. I just knew guys were going to step up, especially in the tournament. But that's the definitely the hardest part, you know, you're having a full solid team and then boom, last minute, just somebody goes down. So, but I definitely, I mean, at Syracuse, we're like all brothers. We always felt like whatever happens, someone else could step up to that role. So I feel like that's how our team was.
Well, guys came close because even without Fab, the defensive player in the league in the Big East, you won three tournament games, and the one you lost, where, you know, if you win, you go to the Final Four.
Yeah.
I mean, that was a tight game. That was a close game. I mean, I think you can honestly make the case that with Fab, you guys beat that Ohio State team and go on. But the fact is that even without him, you had won those three games and you were this close.
Definitely. I know. I mean, we felt it during the Ohio State game because Jared Sullinger was was tough. Definitely tough. And just having Fab out there, I feel like would have neutralized it. But, you know, we can't really do nothing about it. But Ohio State was a great team as well that year. So,
all right, before I let you go, we're going to end this on a fun note. Do you remember how many three-pointers you made against Arkansas your senior year down there in Fayetteville?
Oh, man, 9 3-pointers, huh?
9! Yes, 9. You're exactly right.
So, no, it was definitely felt good. Yeah, that was definitely a good day because we went there as the enemy, but I got a lot of fans in Arkansas because of that game. So, they were good. There were some good guys. It was a good atmosphere. It was honestly, they said it was the toughest atmosphere in the league that year because their only home loss was us.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah,
I think you're right. Yeah. Bud Walton Arena is no joke. It's a tough place to play. And I think that's what made your 9 3-pointers all the more amazing is that you didn't do it at the Carrier Dome or some other random venue. You did it against Arkansas in their place.
I was always the type of person that the louder the arena, the better it is for me. I just love that feeling. It's just exciting. It's thrilling. I feel like it helps me lock in more, definitely. But no, that was a good team as well. Those guys were tough. But one thing about Mark Carter Williams, as soon as I hit one, he just keeps going back. He's like, you know what? There was times where he was literally in the paint in the fast break 1-on-1. He said, you know what? I'm just gonna throw the ball behind me. And oh, there's James Cash. So it worked out. It worked out well.
Playing at Bud Walton made up for playing on the deck of the USS Midway for a 3-point shooter, right?
Oh my God! I already before that game even happened, I told my guys, watch this. I shot the ball facing the other way. The ball curved and went to the basket. And I was like, I shot it not even at the basket. I shot it like 45 degree angle, and it just, the wind just blew it right to the basket. Like, yep, that's the kind of day it's gonna be. I said, that's the last shot I take. Everything was a layup.
Yeah, I think CJ Fair was the only guy who made a three that day. Either team.
I was like, I'm not ruining my 3-point percentage for this. So like, it was all to the basket. That's actually the game coach put me in the top of the zone because like it makes no sense. We're all lanky, you know. No one's gonna make a shot out here. Just put me in the top of the zone. And I was like, all right. So it worked out. We won the game. It was nice. The jerseys were amazing. We the nice camel jersey. So good San Diego State team. I enjoyed it, even though I couldn't hit a three.
Yeah. Well, James, listen, I told you before we started recording, I said, you're not going to believe how fast a half an hour goes on the podcast. And
right, fast. Yeah.
It did. It's gone fast. And it's been a pleasure for me to have you on here and get to see and talk to you again because it has been way too long. So thank you for joining us, okay?
Thank you for having me. We'll catch up for sure.
Next time you're in the queue, so I want to hear from you.
Definitely.
All right, James, thank you again for joining us here on the podcast, the Inside Syracuse Basketball Podcast, brought to you by our amazing sponsor, Krause Health. Again, we do thank our sponsor there, and we thank James again, too, for joining us. So until next time on the podcast, this is Mike Waters saying so long, everybody.
I want to thank James for joining me on the podcast today, and thanks to you out there as well for listening in. Please subscribe to the show wherever you get your podcast and follow all of our complete coverage of Syracuse basketball on Syracuse.com. Until next time on the Inside Syracuse Basketball Podcast, I'm Mike Waters.